And welcome back to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep minute by minute into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I am one of your hosts, Zach.
And I'm John.
And we are back. We just got off some heavy baseball, Chicago, and papacy talk.
Yep.
So if only we had a bonus feed to to drop these kinds of conversations in, because I think probably no one would care, but I would still like to release them one day.
That'd be fun. Maybe we'll do it after season two.
Yeah.
Because we've got, we have the Waffle House episode.
Well, no, okay, what would be good is as we are shutting the doors to this podcast operation, which we will do eventually.
Yeah.
We just drop everything that we don't care about. And so it lives on in perpetuity, and we don't have to give a shit about feedback.
This is a Dune podcast. Why are you talking about Waffle House and baseball?
Because we're from Atlanta.
Yeah. In case you were curious, top of the fourth now, 0-0. Okay. Braves Pirates.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. Very cool.
But yeah, it's a Thursday show.
It certainly is. And we are talking about minute 48 through 49. And we're picking back up with Chaw on the Rocks, which is my new favorite cocktail.
You wrote that one out.
I did not. I just thought of that.
All right. So I had the balls of you bad. You had Chaw on the Rocks.
Yeah. They're standing and watching the sun setting. Chani puts her head on Paul's shoulder. It's very sweet.
Yeah.
And we
very playful too. She does
she doesn't just rest her head.
Yeah.
She kind of throws herself into his shoulder, which,
and they're laughing and all that shit. You know,
it's very, very nice.
Romance is building.
It certainly is.
Romance is romantically building.
So is this a fast forward a little bit?
This is definitely a time has passed.
Yeah.
A little bit, but not as much as in the books.
True. So we get a little bit of a fast forward, and we get the POV view looking down, a scope basically.
Yeah.
Or binoculars, or I think they use monoculars.
It's a monocular, but also there's a secondary lens, which may act as a rangefinder. I don't know.
Okay.
Art and Soul doesn't have anything about it, so I can't tell you.
It is extremely, extremely similar to the ranging, and I'm gonna fuck up my words here, the range finding scopes that a sniper's second will use.
Yeah,
so it looks like that, and we get to see a pretty cool, fairly quick action scene here.
Yeah,
and I took a lot of notes on this one, so let's kind of go through this play by play.
Let's break it down.
Yeah,
so. You have in the background, in the far background, three spice harvesters being carried by three carryalls.
Yes.
As one is wont to do with a carryall.
Right.
Carry things.
Now, this is the first time that we've seen a Harkonnen combo like this in flight. We've seen them land before. We've seen them in the final stages of landing.
Sure.
But we've never seen them just cruising along in flight before.
Correct.
So I thought that was really fun. We get just a good view of the totality of the operation. Carry all on top. It's got its little docking arms. And then the big spice harvester at the bottom. Which, side note, I figured out a stronger analogy for the little teeth thing on the harvester.
Okay.
There's a piece of equipment that is often used in lawn care, called an aerator.
Yeah.
Now, some of them are just drums with spikes on the outside
that roll
and poke holes.
Yeah.
But some of them are plugs, and they have the teeth that are almost the exact same mechanism.
Yeah, they're kind of on a crankshaft on the axle and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did not know this existed when we did our minutes earlier about when we got the close-ups of them, but I know they exist now. So that is a much stronger analogy to whatever we said they were back then.
Well, the nice thing is that those episodes haven't come out yet, so you can go in and...
I'm not going to do that.
Okay.
I will.
All right. We have these three harvesters being carried by the carryalls, as carryalls are wont to do.
Yep.
In the far background.
Yes.
In the closest frame of reference to us, there are two ornithopters flying in formation. Mm-hmm. Behind them in the middle ground, I'll call it, there's another ornithopter that's flying. He's a little slow.
He's bringing up the rear.
Yeah. Now, of the two ornithopters in the foreground that are flying together in formation, one of them gets fucking missiled right yes. where the wings meet the body of the ornithopter's
right.
hull. Mm-hmm. Rest in peace to the heart
empennage. The empennage, John. Shut it's the called the empennage or the fuselage.
This guy's studying for his pilot's license and he thinks he knows everything.
I know a little.
Rest in peace to the heart mollusks.
Yep.
They did their job, but...
But, yeah, that missile, but then again, they were working for the Harkonnens, dude.
They were.
So,
but also, like... You say that as if the Atreides are the good guys.
Well, I know, but if we're boiling this down to a two-party system, the Atreides are better. I'm not saying good. I'm just saying better.
The lesser of two evils is still evil.
100% agree.
Yeah. In no way is this a commentary on American politics, but here we are.
No.
Yeah. One ornithopter just gets completely fucked up by this missile. And then the other one, for the first time ever, has machine guns on the front of it that is immediately shooting at where the missile came from.
Yeah.
That kind of put me out of it, if I'm going to be honest with you.
Okay. Well, think about... Okay, did we see... We did not see any kind of machine gun action when Duncan stole the ornithopter and was
correct
chasing through the city.
Right. All we had was the laser gun that was trailing him.
Okay. We've seen ornithopters fire missiles before. Mm-hmm. So we got some at Paul and Jessica as they entered the storm last movie.
Yep.
But yeah, you're right. We've never seen a...
The only kinetic ballistic weapon that we've seen is a Mala pistol.
And this missile that we just saw.
Sure.
Yeah, I thought that was a little odd too. We've never seen their guns operate like that.
But maybe this is just Harkonnen flavor and
could be.
You know. Or it could have just been added as like a movie thing.
Could be. The in-universe explanation that I have for that is they are generally under strict instructions to not use laser weapons because of the interactions with shields and all that kind of stuff.
Yep. As we discussed heavily a couple weeks ago.
Exactly. But I don't know. I thought it was cool. I mean, it's very much like a normal helicopter.
Yep.
It was the Harvester scene before the naming ceremony where you had mentioned that a lot of the stuff was filmed using like Black Hawk helicopters.
Yep. The Jordanian military had Black Hawks retrofitted with the prop mounted gun.
Right. Yeah. Right. I wonder if this was footage of them actually firing, like maybe blanks or test rounds or something like that. Probably not, but it's very much like a actual Black Hawk would look if it was, you know, making a banking turn and shooting.
Maybe.
So
if you're a Black Hawk pilot,
yeah,
let us know how wrong we are.
Yeah, that would be fun. Then this is the really cool part. So, we get a laser
that
fires at the lead carryall. And I thought initially hit the base of the carryall, right where the balloons come out.
Yep.
But it didn't.
No, it slices the arm of the carryall.
Now think about this from a geometry standpoint. That was a very large distance that the laser moved to cut the arm off.
And there's not a lot of distance between the top of the harvester and the bottom of the carryall.
No, it's not. So it's a very good shot.
Yeah.
But if you draw that line back to the gun, which looks like a long distance, a very long way, that means that motion that the laser gun operator was just minute.
Yep.
Which is so cool.
Because as you go further out, you're...
Yeah.
Yep.
Really fucking cool shit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, really, really cool. It just cuts through one of the arms that mm-hmm. is... I call them docking clamps.
Sure.
That are on the carry-all. It is the carrying portion of the carry-all. It like just falls.
Yeah. You
know? It ain't got nothing holding it up. So it falls.
That southern ass fucking. Oh God.
If it ain't going up, it's going down.
Jesus Christ. But yeah, it slices the arm, and then I guess the sudden jerking motion just like caused it to unclamp. We don't know exactly how it clamps onto the various harvesters that we've seen. I would assume magnetically, but when you apply enough downward force.
Yeah. Well, if it's magnetic, then think of it like a surface area thing.
Yeah.
If you're trying to pull at a 90 degree away from the magnet's going to be really fucking hard to do that.
Yeah.
But if you pull at a gradual like angle down, it's a lot easier to get a magnet off.
Yeah.
So that's probably what happened. Also, those things are just fucking heavy.
Oh, yeah.
So without one clamp, we've seen what happens without one clamp, at least with the Atreides harvester.
You can't do shit.
Can't do shit. So it looks like these only have two that attach. Maybe it's four.
No, it's four. Because we saw earlier when the first Harkonnen harvester of this movie was mm-hmm. dropped down, we saw it. Had four.
Okay, so just like from this perspective, I guess it just looks like two. Just two can't cut it, so it plummets to the ground.
Point is, really fucking good shot on behalf of that gunner.
Mm-hmm.
And definitively one gunner. There was no second gunman on the grassy knoll.
Yes, that's right. It was just a single gun. I was
also, it's Arrakis, so there's no grassy knoll anyway.
I was wondering what that book depository was doing over there. It felt out of place, but I get it now.
Though some people say that, you know, you can't make that many shots that quickly.
It's true. It's true. Yeah. But he was a trained, you know, Marine.
Yeah, but he also had like a really shitty shooting record too. So, yeah.
What was it? Full Metal Jacket would like to take credit for it.
This is now a conspiracy theory podcast.
I have already been wearing my tinfoil hat. So we've talked a lot about this harvester scene, and this really only takes like 10 seconds out of the movie.
If that.
It's very quick, but I really liked it because it's not something, not a, a style of action that we've seen before.
Yet. Yeah.
Ornithopter gets murked by a missile. And immediately we get the Lay's gun chopping off the docking clamps of this carry-all. We don't get to see what happens to the other carry-alls. I'm assuming something similar.
It's safe to assume that they're also going to be toast. But what we are seeing is what Paul's goals were set out in earlier. Mm-hmm. He is disrupting spice production. This is how he will get to the Emperor.
Yes. Now, speaking of...
Paul,
we get to see him looking through his scope.
Yep. Surprise, all of what we just watched was from Paul's perspective. Funny how it works out like that.
Yeah, but we don't linger here. We cut back to an aerial shot of Arrakeen from slightly behind the shield wall. We get the massive mountains in the foreground, city in the background.
It's dusk.
It is dusk, night in the city. And then we get to an interior shot.
Well, hold on real quick. Uh-huh. We also see a lot more of the Harkonnen architectural influence on Arrakeen, more of the weird, like black bulbous buildings rather than the, you know, tan hard angles of the, infrastructure and, you know, construction that we had before in Dune Part One. And that's one of the things that maybe I lied. Art and Soul, does talk about in some of the earlier episodes that we had. I believe it was 13 when we first saw Arrakeen in Dune Part 2.
Yeah, it was very brief.
Yeah. But another view of the changes that had been made very quickly to the city.
Yeah. Which makes me think these are almost like a circus tent style buildings. Like they just pop them up real quick.
Maybe. Who knows?
Yeah, we don't know. But yeah. They are bulbous, like you said, and yeah, just like pimples all over the city.
Yeah. I'm going to go back a second, though. Mm-hmm. When we had our shot of Paul, this was the movie's moment to say, look, he has the eyes of Ubad now.
Yeah.
And and it's very definitively that blue within blue.
Yeah.
And that is for sure the movie's way of saying time has passed.
Yeah. Well, cool. It's like a very slow iodine clock reaction.
Yeah.
Write in if you get that. I don't know how many people will. Do you get that? Oh, John. That's where it's the chemistry experiment where they you put I forget what chemicals it in, but you shake it up, and depending on how much reactant you put in,
where it just like automatically turns from white to black. Yeah.
So it's a very slow iodine clock reaction.
Chemistry is my dad's field.
Okay.
That was never mine.
That is the subject I loved the most in college. Loved it. And I was not in any kind of field or course of study that needed chemistry. So I electively took it wasn't exactly organic chemistry, but it was just like chemistry 2 or whatever. Because I loved it. My dad, biologist, took a lot of chemistry. I remember when we were driving our old shitbox truck to the landfill, he would teach me organic chemistry basics while we were going. So I've always been a fucking nerd.
My dad is a fucking nerd. This guy's got a master's in like organic chemistry, a master's in physical chemistry, and a master's in math. And he tried teaching me chemistry, and like I could get through like AP Chem and stuff, but my brain is so much more just like math, you know, calculus and physics oriented than chemistry oriented. So
it's all math at the end, man.
Yeah.
Math is the purest of sciences. So we get right after our aerial shot of Arakeen, we get an interior shot
of some goons.
I was about to say, guess who's back? Yeah, we get the goons. The goons are back. The goons and... Are we going to rehash this?
Yeah.
We're going to rehash this now.
Yeah. We hashed it on Blue Sky this week, and we're going to rehash it again. Rabban. Because, as you will note, later in this minute, a few seconds from now even, we hear the Baron Vladimir Harkonnen say... Rabban.
Okay, but he's also saying it in the way that Skarsgård says everything, which is
Rabban.
Yeah. So it's like, all right, there could be some inflection that's supposed to be there that we're not getting.
I figured at this point, Denis Villeneuve would have been like, "It's Rabban."
Yeah.
If
who knows?
Yeah, it's fucking Rabban.
I think I got most of the Dune nerds on Blue Sky on my side.
I will die on this hill.
That's fine. That's fine.
That said, I did also bring up the counterpoint of maybe he just pronounces his name wrong because he's an asshole.
That's very funny.
So who knows?
That's good, strong head canon.
And, right, and there is canon for Vladimir wanting to offend as many people as possible, including with his own body.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, I am, I'm going to now forever have the piece of evidence that is the pronunciation chart that Frank Herbert wrote that has a clear accent on the second syllable.
Oh, like the one that says jihad should be pronounced jihad?
Yeah, that one. So if we can go ahead and correct all those going forward, that would be great.
I would like to shout out Atreides Nuts for providing the canon explanation for the Baron's desire to be as offensive as possible.
Mm-hmm.
The Baron was a seeker after sensations. The fat was a side effect, then perhaps something to experience for itself because it offended people and he enjoyed offending. Moneo Atreides, God Emperor of Dune.
You know, I try to tell my doctor that too. The fat is the fat is a side effect.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, you should not do that.
Maybe you should eat better and like go for a walk every
The fat's
now
just a side effect of my lifestyle, doc. You know, comes with the territory.
You don't understand. I'm here to offend people. We're two white guys with a podcast. We're gonna offend people.
Jesus. Yeah, probably. Yeah. Anyways.
But yeah, we have three hooded goons and six unhooded goons.
So you said three hooded, six unhooded?
Yep.
So that was... Okay, the Harkonnens are into circumcision then.
Possibly.
It's not mandatory. But it is something that happens.
It's a 2-to-1 circumcised to uncircumcised ratio.
Yeah, it seems like it's done for, you know, religious and religious reasons.
God, this episode is so fucking chaotic. Holy shit. We have JFK assassination jokes.
This whole week has been weird, man.
Yeah.
Not weird, just good.
Yeah. It's a very different tone this week compared to last week.
Yes, last week was like academic and and like serious and not saying bad by any stretch of imagination.
No. We to clarify, we love having David on. He's great.
I think I held back a lot on my dick and fark jokes last week, so I'm getting them all out now.
Yeah.
They are standing by this big ass door.
Huge ass door.
Very ornately carved. I did not get a good look at what was carved on it, but
it's just a scenes radial kind of design.
Okay. Whatever's going on in the other room is horrifying.
Yep.
Because we hear a woman shrieking.
Blood-curdling screams.
Yes. And we get that from the subtitles first, and then we hear it. And it's, yeah, it is terrifying in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we hear a loud thud, and the screaming stops. Not generally a good order of events.
Well, maybe she killed the mouse that she, like, saw in the corner or whatever.
Sure. Sure. We'll find out.
Okay.
And from the other room, we hear the Baron call for Rabin.
Rabin.
I love the kind of like just
the moment that Rabin takes where he like looks back around, at everyone else and he's like, what the fuck? And they're just like, this is your problem, man.
Yeah. So like he looks around at his goons and then like kind of reluctantly walks in the door.
Yeah.
And we are back to the Baron floating. Is this the we've not gotten a lot of Baron this movie.
This is our second time seeing him.
Right.
The first was when he ordained Rabin as presumably as governor of Arrakis with his giant ass like necklace medallion thing.
Right. And he had all of his floating medical equipment around him too. Yep. So
notably medical equipment less here.
Well, he's got a lot less stuff on him this time.
Yeah. In fact, he's naked, just ass out and everything, covered in all of his black oil goop that we had in the last time that we saw him in Dune Part 1, in his recovery chamber.
Okay, so can I skip around just a smidge? We only have like, we have like 30 seconds left in the movie or in this minute.
No, 30 seconds of the movie. No, the movie just abruptly ends with this fat, naked ass man covered in black oil.
If only, man. what a power move had that been the case. So shortly after we see this, we see Rabin look to his left and we see what that thud was.
Yeah.
We see the two attendants, not sure if they're the same attendants, but it's just two attendants.
Sure.
the people who are taking care of the Baron, and they are dead on the ground.
They're taking a nap.
Sure. They're dead on the ground.
They're taking a nap. One of them is like kind of propped in the corner too.
Yeah. Looking away from us.
Yeah.
So that one could credibly be sleeping, but the other one definitely looks dead. Mm. They're in their Patrick Bateman raincoats and there is black goo all around
me. Hey, Paul.
Now, this is just a little harebrained theory that I thought of when I was watching this minute. Is Harkonnen blood black?
No.
No?
No, because we
see in the fight at the end of the... Okay, yes. Okay. Dispel that then. I was wondering, like, why is all this black goo around them? Like, it looks like blood splatter would look.
It does, but it's just Vladimir's goop everywhere.
Eww,
but
gross.
What's notable is that the attendants are not covered in it.
Yeah.
So, okay. Vladimir is so fat that he can't walk, which is why he has his suspender field. Are we just to believe that he has the strength to like throw these people against walls?
Yes.
Okay.
Because if you remember, or at least when he was at full strength before the poison attack, he basically palmed UA up. Even if he had
with the help of his suspender.
Well, he could have had suspensor help with this too.
Okay.
But even still, okay, so holding like a dumbbell.
Yeah.
Or a kettlebell or something like with a straight arm out like that is fucking hard.
Sure.
Picking up a man, even if the suspensors are helping you go vertical.
Yeah.
Just still even holding that requires a lot of strength.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So he just fucking slams them against the wall, I guess.
I guess so. Yeah.
All right.
That's what I think. Or slam them into the ground. Wall is probably. Yeah, more. Just given the way they fell, wall is probably more likely.
I would like to point out, very nice towel set.
Sure. Yeah. Who did the linens?
Where do you get these? Like I ask, Bed Bath & Beyond?
Like I ask every hotel that I stay in, where'd you get your linens? They're great.
I don't know, some fucking supply company or whatever.
Sometimes they'll tell you. If it's like a good hotel that's like proud of their stuff, they'll tell you. Yeah. They do, or at least they do it for mattresses. I've looked into buying hotel mattresses if I get a particular, like particularly a nice one. So the Baron is floating back down into his pool of black goo. And he says, Fremen attacks on your watch. Your orders were to restore spice production to full capacity. Do you know what it means if you fail? And this is where Raban looks over and we see the attendants. So I kind of jumbled up the order of operations here to talk about it. But the Baron then continues. The Emperor will take spice control.
Spice out of our control. Yeah,
the Emperor will take spice out of our control. Tighten your grip, Raban. And Raban tries to interject with an uncle. And that is where our minute ends.
Once again, we're not ending the conversation with the minute, but we're at least ending sentences.
Right.
So.
Yep.
I want to give props to Dave Bautista for this scene. He does a very good job of portraying just like his fear of his uncle, which is a little different for Dave Bautista because normally he's the like big intimidating one in these scenes and everything. But like, I don't remember where... you and I might have been having this conversation, or maybe I was listening to it on another podcast or something, but like Dave Bautista has done a really good job of avoiding being typecast.
Well, okay. Yes. And I was about to ask, is Dave Bautista the best wrestler turned actor?
Absolutely.
Hands down. I 100% agree.
Hands down.
Yep. He has range. Whereas, The Rock doesn't.
No.
The Rock plays The Rock in every movie that he's in.
I think it's a very short performance, but like his performance in Blade Runner 2049, also the Denis Villeneuve movie.
Wonderful.
Whew. Like when he's staring down death like that.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Yep. Beautiful. I don't know if you watched Cabin in the Woods. I know some people liked it. Some people didn't like it. Cabin
I don't even know what that is.
It's a movie from 2020, either 2020 or like 2021.
Is it a scary movie?
Not really.
Is it supposed to be a scary movie?
It's billed as more of like a psychological thriller, I think.
Okay, I'd probably like it. Yeah. I'm not a horror movie guy.
It's not really a horror movie.
Okay, I would probably
It's more it. Of like a... You'll be fine.
I don't know. I don't want to have nightmares, John.
No, you'll be all right. But he does a really good job in that as well.
Nice.
Playing like a kind of psychotic kind of guy.
Yeah.
So,
I am a known Marvel skeptic.
Hater.
I won't say hater, skeptic.
Yeah.
And so I'm forgetting his character that he plays in Guardians. What's that?
Drax.
Okay. So from playing that, I did enjoy Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
Those are great movies.
Fun movie.
Or at least the first one was really good.
Yeah.
Actually, no, all of them were pretty decent.
I didn't watch the third one.
Oh, they made a third one.
Yeah.
I didn't know they made a third one. The first two were pretty decent. From his character there, which is this like, I'm not going to say lovable idiot, but kinda.
Yeah.
He's very jovial.
Not very jovial. He's like a, he has no sense of social cues, but he's just like a muscular killer kind of character.
I meant jovial in the, it seems like he always has an upbeat attitude.
Yeah.
That's what I mean by that. Yes, I know he's a killer. but from that to going to play, you know, Blade Runner, like you said, and then to Raban here, it's like, that is a range, mm-hmm. you know, and that is a really, really good range. And he takes it seriously. And he's great.
Yeah.
So we cannot praise Dave Bautista enough.
Also, Glass Onion.
Ah, yes. I forgot about Glass Onion.
Yeah.
He's kind of a dick in that movie.
Yeah. But
again, range.
Yeah. Definitely the best wrestler turned actor for sure. Yeah. Way better than The Rock.
It's all just stupid.
But yeah, our minute ends with Uncle.
Yep. The conversation that we're having right now is one that we talked about at the end of the last movie, I believe. So they had this whole conversation about how much spice production was costing them and how, you know, Raban needs to squeeze and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah,
we've already really covered the book notes for this little section here. So I don't have anything written. But this conversation does take place in a sense earlier in the book,
mm-hmm.
in the first section of the book.
Yeah. I think all of the profit from the 80 years of Harkonnen control.
Exactly. Yeah.
Was spent trying to retake control of Arrakis. So
yeah, hiring the Sardaukar and all the bribes.
Yeah.
And
so they're fucking back to, you know, poor as shit at this point. So
yeah.
Valio would be so disappointed.
Would she even recognize the family?
I think so.
I don't know, man. It's this. I mean, I'm going to say like the way that the Harkonnens are now to the way that the Harkonnens were in Dune Prophecy.
They're way more ruthless.
Yeah, but it's like,
it's a different kind of ruthless, though.
To me, it's like that one trait of restoring the family name and like revenge on the Harkonnens. That
or one revenge on the Atreides.
So yeah, thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Revenge on the Atreides has, this is going to be an apt comparison, but grown like a cancer, like within the family.
Sure.
And it is mutated and just, I don't think it'd be recognizable to them or to Valya. Right? So we'll never know, but that's a good thought, like thought experiment. Would Valya recognize the Harkonnens and would she approve? Maybe.
Who knows?
All right. We are at 43 minutes of record time on this one. So let's go ahead and end it.
Yep.
And we get back for a Friday episode tomorrow.
As always, you can find us online. We are on Blue Sky at DuneMinute.com, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch with us that way. Tomorrow's a Friday episode. Let's wrap this week up.
And speaking of Blue Sky, you can find the thread where we discussed the pronunciations on there. Go ahead and weigh in if you have opinions. All right, cool. We will see y'all tomorrow.
Later.